Hey, everybody. Jefferson Graham here with a very special guest, Steve Brazel from Behind the Shot TV. We have a lot of fun stuff for you today. We're going to talk about iCloud, what's wrong with iCloud for photo sharing. I have my opinion. Steve has a slightly different opinion, maybe a strongly different opinion. We're going to announce the contest winner from last week. In the second half hour, we're going to take your questions in the second half hour. And we have a new contest today that's really cool. We have a one-year free subscription to Kelby One, which is the premier photo online instruction program out there. We'll tell you more about that again in the second half hour. First, I'd like to introduce you to Steve Brazel, longtime friend. He is a host of the podcast called, I should be looking over here, not at the microphone. I should be looking over here.
I do the same thing, man.
Steve
I'm pulling up the video.
Steve is the host of Behind the Shot .tv, which I'm going to let him tell you about right now.
So hi everybody. My name is Steve Brazel. I host the Behind the Shot podcast, which is a show Jefferson's been on. In fact, we did one time where we both did each other's connected to a long story. It's at behindtheshot.tv. I am a Southern California based live music photographer. So basically concert photography is what I do. You can find me at my website, which is stevebrazel.com. It's like the country Brazil with two L's. And yes, this is going to be an interesting conversation. I've known Jefferson for years. We agree on almost everything. And then there's those topics. Going to be fun.
Okay. Yes, I'm still learning my way through Ecamm. And Steve has been unbelievable in helping me learn Ecamm. Ecamm is the software that lets us go live and lets us see questions coming in from everybody. We're going to answer your questions in the second half hour and tell you more about the contest. We're going to talk about iCloud. We're going to talk about backup and losing your passcode and all the things that could go wrong. We're going to talk about alternatives to iCloud. Again, we're going to answer your questions. But I think we should start off with some news. Let's do the news roundup. We'll begin with, you know, the average digital camera price has doubled over the last 3 years. Steve, why do you think that is?
Well, it's because the average, so if you think about the market as a whole, right? And I'm doing the same thing that you're doing, by the way. I'm pulling up so that I can see comments on my screen too. If you think about who buys most of the cameras, we have professional cameras still, and pros are going to buy pro gear. But the truth of the matter is the most camera sales were families taking pictures of their kids, moms and dads, and point and shoots, or maybe not even prosumer cameras, but consumer mirrorless or DSLRs. And now with as good as phones are, any phone, whether it be an iPhone or an Android phone or whatever, those fill that gap. So what's happening is the analogy I make on the cost thing is I was a DJ. I'm still a DJ in radio, but I DJed weddings and stuff for years. You can still buy a Technics 1200 turntable instead of a Mark II when I was DJing. It's a Mark VII now. That turntable, an actual vinyl turntable, is $1,000 now because they're just not selling as many. It's just, you know, it's basically the market that we have.
Right. So we're paying more money for cameras and yep. We're not using the cheap cameras anymore. So this is how the camera manufacturers are making a living. Alistair is here from Scotland. Thank you so much. I know two guys who are looking forward to saying hi to you in person next week, right?
Yeah, Alistair, I really need to find you at WPPI and meet you in person because I've known you for a couple of years now. So that's awesome.
We're going to give you some more news in a minute. First, don't forget to smash the like button. Let YouTube know that you're enjoying the show. If you please leave a comment. Please leave some questions. Please subscribe to PhotoWalks TV if you haven't already. I am 490 away from 10,000, from the magic 10,000 mark, which is a symbolic little statistic that lets you know that you're doing okay. So hit that button for me. Next in the news, the iPhone Photography Awards. The submissions end on March 31st. This is a fun contest because Apple pays attention to it and they promote the winner. And you always want to be promoted by Apple, right? And really, really interesting stuff. I have the links to all this stuff. It will be coming in the description, everywhere to go. And the show notes for those of you who are listening to the audio podcast at iPhonePhotoTeam.com as well. So what will you get? You could win an iPad Air. And the three runners-up will get an Apple Watch. What do you think, Steve?
You know, this like you say, Apple pays attention to this. But the big thing for me about this one is it's a photography contest that, yes, it does have a fee. But it's almost really respectful of the photographers that are submitting their art. The fees are really reasonable. It starts at like $550 for one image. You can do 50 images for $135. It's, you know, if you're doing three or four, it's probably less than $20. But here's the thing. I went and looked through the frequently asked questions and the terms of service. Because you always wonder with photo contests, are they taking your photo? Are they taking the rights of your photo? And here's what it says in their frequently asked questions. Copyright and all other rights remain that of the photographer. Any photograph used by IPPA or IPP awards shall carry the photographer's credit line. So they're going to make sure that they credit you. Use may include publication in their media sponsor publication. All entrants understand and agree that any image submitted to the competition may be used for their marketing, promotional purposes. That makes sense. But the key is you retain all of your copyright. They're just basically going to say, we want to be able to use your photo to market the contest itself. And that's, to me, that's completely fair. So they're doing it the right way.
If nothing else, even if you don't submit, you'll want to look at the pictures because, I mean, it's a worldwide conference, a worldwide contest. Pictures look really good, really interesting. You'll see all different parts of the world. I believe last year the winner shot it on an iPhone 7. So it's not just the latest iPhone, which is pretty cool.
Well, and you know, let me throw in really quick with Alistair in here because Alistair is with Smug Mug and Flickr. And you're connected to Smug Mug and Flickr yourself. And I use Flickr on a regular basis. The thing that I love about iPhonography in a contest like this is if you browse Flickr and you search Flickr for smartphone photography, iPhone, you know, whatever it is, Galaxy S22, it is shocking what is being created today with smartphones. Seriously, it is shocking what you will see. Just had to throw that in.
Yes, and I agree with you. For those of you who don't know, I shoot a series called PhotoWatts TV. New episodes every Saturday right here on YouTube. I do the entire episode primarily on an iPhone. When I say primarily, that would be 90%. I do some GoPro shots and some drone shots as well, and occasionally get really crazy with the Insta360. Speaking of Flickr, to participate in our contest to win that free one-year membership to Kelby One, you'll be submitting your photos on Flickr, and we'll tell you more about that in the second half hour. In other news, there was a big story in the Wall Street Journal this week about some people that lost everything because people were stealing their sign-in codes, the six-digit number on their phones. And this happened primarily in bars. And their bank accounts got drained. Within just a few seconds, people would watch them typing and then would get the phone and type in the number and get in there and turn off Find My iPhone and get access to everything. And it's a pretty scary thing. Most of us don't share our phones in a way that people can steal them. But it's more the password sharing that concerns me, the password storage. Because if you store, and Steve's going to disagree with me about this, but if you store your password, they can get in to your bank accounts. And so before we go to Steve, I would just say, do a test on your phone and see how easy it is to get into your bank account, into your Venmo, into whatever you use. And if it's easy for you, think about how easy it would be for someone else. Steve?
Okay. I love the way you said that. So, okay, let me clarify this, or let me kind of set this up. I'm an IT person by trade. My first, for any techies out there, my first MCSE, which is Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, was way back at NT351, Windows NT351. I've been around tech for a long time. I'm an independent IT consultant. You are 100% correct that this is a problem. And I will blame, in this particular case, Apple for one very important thing. You have basically two things that we're talking about on, let's use the iPhone, but let's be clear up front. This applies to Android as well, but the headline is going to be Apple because it's Apple. So here's the thing. You got two accounts. You have your Apple ID, which is your email and a long password, and it's what you use to buy things or what you use for syncing your messages, etc. Then you have what is not really called a password, it's called a passcode, which is generally a 4-digit or 6-digit number that you type into your phone to unlock your phone. And here's where Apple, in my opinion, is messing up here. And Joanna Stern talks about this in her video for the Wall Street Journal and the post that she did for the Wall Street Journal. If I get hold of your phone and I know your passcode to unlock your phone, I have the ability of going in and turning off Find My, which requires your Apple ID password to do. But here's the thing. I can reset your Apple ID password, which could be a 20-character random generated difficult password. I can reset that if I know your 4-digit PIN code to unlock the phone, passcode. That's a mistake on Apple's part. That's a huge mistake on Apple's part. However, and this is where we're going to probably disagree, it is not their responsibility to teach you internet safety. They have manuals on how to use the phone, right? Their responsibility is to put the tools in your hand. And at a certain point, you are responsible for your safety. You are responsible for your data. So it is very, very critical that you, as the end user, assume that responsibility. You don't go to an ATM today, put your ATM card in, and type your 4-digit or whatever ATM code without really thinking about, is the next person in line 5 feet behind me or right behind me? We're all hyper aware of that. But for some reason with our phone, we type in our code and we're not aware of it. And my argument is that's your responsibility. You need to be aware anytime you're typing any password or passcode if you are being spied on or watched, and that you keep it under wraps. Okay. I have a whole bunch more I could go into. But
So in the video that Joanna Stern did, she interviewed a cop who said that primarily most people are stealing iPhones because they're much higher resale and they don't waste time with Android phones. I mean, just think about it. Would you buy, you don't see a lot of used Samsung Galaxies going out for lots and lots of money. Okay, so it's a problem. Go ahead, Steve.
No, let me add this, though, because this is actually key. On the password storage thing, she does not say don't store your passwords, and I don't tell clients not to store your passwords. So on an iPhone, you have Keychain, Apple Keychain, which is the built-in password manager. The problem I have with Keychain is that Keychain is tied into the device. So if I unlock my phone with Face ID or my passcode, I've also unlocked all of my passwords. So if somebody does know my passcode and they get in, they can then see all of my passwords. What she recommends and what I recommend is separate the two. Get a third-party password manager, not LastPass, okay? Because, just look up LastPass and you'll see the news. I use 1Password. I love 1Password. By separating your password manager from your device, it's a completely separate password, and I have a very complex, very long master password for my password manager that you can't get into my password manager if you just simply know my passcode. And one of the things that they state in this, or the Joanna states in this article, is a lot of times what these people will do is they will trick you into entering your passcode in front of them. So they'll say, hey, can I see that picture? They'll borrow your phone and they'll manually restart your phone, because on restart, you'll have to enter your passcode in front of them. Well, my 1Password does unlock with my Face ID. But if they reboot my phone, my 1Password on any reboot requires that I enter the password again. So here's what I want to stress. You have to decide as an end user, convenience versus security. We all do it, right? We all have one bolt on our door. We don't have 10. 10 would be more secure perhaps, but we've chosen the convenience of only one. We use Face ID, which may not be as secure as a long password. Or here's a good example. You've chosen a 4-digit PIN code to unlock your phone. You can change that as I have. The code to unlock my phone is over 10 characters, right? But you've chosen the convenience of only using 4. We all make that balance judgment. Where's the security level that causes me to go, this isn't worth it? And we stay below that. I would recommend getting a separate password manager. You can have it never unlock without a password if you want, or you can balance that and say, I'm willing to have it unlock with Face ID, but if I reboot my phone, make me type the password again, or after 30 minutes, make me type my password again.
Okay, so
you are responsible.
I have a password manager as well. Okay.
Which one?
Dashlane. I couldn't be happier with it. I have over 100 passwords. It's a big help. It doesn't work on television. That is a big problem, but that's another story. The worst thing you could ever do is have a complicated password to pass into to get into Netflix or something else on your TV, and you'll drive yourself crazy. But anyway, so again, I wouldn't have stored passwords in Apple. That's me. Go do a test. Go do a test and see how easy it would be to get into your Vanguard account, into your Chase account. Could someone do it? And then start thinking about maybe there's a better way. But speaking of iCloud.
Hold on. Before you do that, can I add one thing?
Because
this is actually critical.
Sure.
As long as we're talking security, let me just give you the best security tip I've ever learned. Your email password is one of your most important passwords. I literally have clients say to me, that's just my email. Your email password is one of your most important passwords, because if I get hold of anything and I go to your bank, and I know you're a Bank of America customer, and I say, reset my password, what does it do? It sends me a reset link to my email. If I own your email, then yes, I can own you. So your email password is actually super critical. Make that one a strong one. Sorry.
Of course. Make it and have a different password for every website that you go to. And don't use Steve123, and don't use your address, and don't use your girlfriend or your wife or your kids, et cetera, et cetera. Make it a little harder. But some of these people who got their lives torn apart when somebody stole their passcode and they went into their account also got all their photos taken away. Speaking of the photo angle on this show, all their photos got locked because the owner of the phone got locked out of their iCloud account. There's a lot of problems with iCloud, at least per me. Steve may disagree on this. I went to the barber to get my hair cut on Saturday, and the woman that was cutting my hair told me about how she gets these endless nag messages from Apple, and she has no room on her phone, so she started deleting all these pictures. But she said, it's okay, because everything's in iCloud, so I'm protected. And I said, no, tell me you didn't delete off iCloud. And of course she did, and she lost a lot of pictures. So I'm not a fan of iCloud for photo backup. I think it's the worst place to do it, because they will delete it, because they're always telling you you don't have enough room on your phone. And this poor woman had an iPhone XR from many years ago. I bet she had 32 gigs on there. Most people are out of room. So I think there's some great alternatives. One of them would be SmugMug and Flickr. We've got our friend Alistair here waving in the background. Steve, I'd like to get your take, and then we could talk about alternatives.
So here's what's interesting. And this is, and Jefferson and I have these same conversations on our own, by the way. We don't disagree. Yes, iCloud is bad for backup. You know why? Because iCloud isn't backup. iCloud is a syncing mechanism. iCloud, everybody understands. I mean, this person at the barbershop, by the way, your hair looks great. This person at the barbershop understood that if I take a picture on my phone and I go home to my Mac, hey, magically that picture is on my Mac, right? It is a syncing device. It is not backup. And even the actual iCloud backup, where you go into your phone and you back up your phone or your iPad and you end up having to buy 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, that's a device backup. But if you look at the documentation, which is clear on their website, it does not back up anything already in iCloud. It's a settings backup. The analogy I'm going to use here is a really bad one, but I'm going to do it anyway. Ford sells you a car. They give you a manual on how to use the car. They don't teach you how to drive. If you're on the internet, that is completely separate from your device. If you buy the device, they'll teach you how to use the device, But understanding the internet and your data is your responsibility. I'm not blaming you if you lost it. Yes, Apple could be more clear, but they can't teach you everything. Even in this show, we can't cover all of this, right? There's limits to what you can do. You are responsible for your data. And if you are, if you want your, like on the Joanna Stern story earlier, the one girl said she lost, when they took her phone and locked her out of her iCloud account, she lost 15 years of precious memories. Well, if they were that precious, it was on you partially, talking about all the other faults Apple had in this, and they do have some fault in that. It is on you to understand backup. So for those of you that don't understand backup, I'm just going to give you one simple thing. Go look up a 3-2-1 backup strategy. Understand the difference between a sync, which is what I do here happens here, and what I do here happens here, and a backup, which should be automated so you don't have to think about it. Otherwise, you won't take the time to do it. And it should be one way so that what changes I make here replicate there, but not the other way. And it should 100% be an independent copy. You should have three copies of your data, the original, something else on site for fast restore, and something off site for disaster recovery.
Okay, so you need to use hard drives. You need to have stuff backed up at home, and hopefully those drives could also go somewhere else, so, and to online places. You need to have physical access to your media, right?
Yep.
And some of these poor people that lost everything, put everything in the cloud and then never got it again. And that's one instance. There's also the classic story of the guy whose son was had a groin issue. The doctor said, take a picture of it. I want to see it. He sent it via Gmail. Google blocked him for life. He lost access to all of his pictures. They said he was a child molester. He was just sending a picture.
Automatic CSAM scanning. Yeah.
Okay. So have access to your photos. One great service. Well, let's run them down. Okay. So we have our friends from SmugMug here. So let's give them a shout out. SmugMug is a wonderful service. It's aimed at photographers, but I say the general public would serve really well by using it. You know, storage is not free. It wasn't before. It will never be. And your storage is only going to get worse and worse and worse because we're shooting high-resolution photos. We're shooting high-resolution videos, and they're only getting bigger, and we don't have room for them unless you're going to buy terabytes and terabytes of drives, which I do. I don't know about you guys. So SmugMug has unlimited storage, $13 a month, and your photos look better there. Big tech's not getting involved. They're not looking at your photos, trying to sell you ads. And there's a lot of great sharing opportunities there. Flickr, I believe, what's the Flickr price, Steve? I think it's cheaper.
I don't know the Flickr Pro price. Alistair could probably put it in the chat, but Flickr is not
a year. I think it's
It's not expensive, you know. And by the way, Jeff put the quote unquote real 3-2-1 backup rule in there. If you want to look at it, it's in the chat. It's three copies, two different media, and one offsite. But Flickr's great. SmugMug is great. Somebody actually asked in here, what are your thoughts on Time Machine backups of photos? Look, Time Machine will back up your whole computer. Here's the problem with just the Time Machine is it's sitting next to your computer. If I break into your house, I'm probably going to steal your computer and the Time Machine hard drive because I'm looking at a hard drive there. I'm going to take that. So you need something offsite. I use Backblaze. I love Backblaze. I've used it for years and years and years. Probably, I don't even know if it's 15, but maybe
it's I think even less. I think it's pretty affordable.
And, it's $60 a year or something like that. $65 a year for the whole computer, everything online. I've got 17 terabytes in Backblaze. So,
okay. So that's a good place. But as far as getting instant access to your photos, we have had a question, what's the difference between SmugMug and Mylio? I'll answer that in a second. I just want to run through the other options. Amazon Photos, if you have Amazon Prime, which many people do, you get unlimited photo storage in Amazon for free. So anybody who's not doing it as a Prime member is out of their minds. The interface is not very good. Pictures don't look good there, but everything is backed up. And if you shoot a lot on your smartphone, and if you're listening to this and watching this, you probably do. All you have to do is open up the Photos app and everything goes straight there. I didn't mention that on SmugMug, same thing. They have an auto iOS app, which is just fantastic. Everything you shoot on here, open up SmugMug and whoosh, goes there. So that's great automatic backup. I'll let Steve have a word in a second. Google Drive, Google Photos. If you Google that, that's $10 a month for 2 terabytes of storage. Google Photos will downgrade the resolution of your photos. Okay. If you throw them all into Google Drive, they don't. And I'm betting that Steve has an idea about some of the stuff. So let's cede the floor.
Actually, everything you said, I totally agree with. I want to hit Jeff up on the comments again, because he said plus one for Backblaze. It is 65 a year, but he mentioned a key thing. So when you're doing backup, you generally want to have what's called versioning, so that, you know, let's take an example. Let's say that I write a file today and I don't look at it for a month, and I go to look at it a month from now, not realizing 3 weeks before that it became corrupted. Well, if I only have 30 days back on my backup, or 2 weeks back on my backup, every backup copy that I have would also be corrupted because it backed up the corrupt copy. Backblaze does have a small surcharge. It's like $2 a month, I think, to add up to a year of versioning and recovery, which is really, really nice. But other than that, everything that Jefferson said, I agree with. Here's the key. Don't do one and just be done, right? It's your data. These are your important memories. And one of the things I talk to people about is you have to decide fail safe versus fail secure, right? If you've got sensitive pictures you don't want people to see, you may want those encrypted. You may only want to put them in an encrypted backup somewhere. But if you lose the encryption key, or the only way you have into that encryption is it's on your computer hard drive encrypted, and that drive dies, you may lose that data forever, but that may be okay to you because it was sensitive. Other ways, you're going to do that trade-off thing we talked about earlier and decide it's more important that I get my kids' photos back, and so I'm not going to encrypt them. You've got a lot of decisions to make. The main thing is have multiple copies, some on-site, some off-site. You can't overdo it if they're important memories.
Yeah, have 2 drives at least, please. And copy everything on one drive to the other drive, all your photos in both places, and or multiple drives. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have a lot of drives on my desk. I have 10, but I shoot a lot of video, and as you know, that takes a lot of room. Alistair lets us know that Flickr Pro, which is the unlimited version, which you can post as many pictures as you want, is $72 a year, or $71.99 to be exact. Steve just disappeared, and I don't know why. So that means that I get the full wide shot right now, and I think he'll be back shortly. Now you can see that I have several guitars behind me, and Buster Keaton as well. Who's a Buster Keaton fan? Raise your hand. I'm hearing Steve, who is coming back. And let's see, I'll do the 2 up. There he is. Hey, Steve, long time.
Hey, how there. Been? I'm back. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I dropped out. My guess is my internet. This is the modern world.
Okay, so we were just talking about Flickr. Flickr is fantastic. We started a Flickr group last week for people to participate in our contest here, and it's really easy and really nice. And I know Steve has been using Flickr groups for a long time. Let me just plug the contest real quickly. Submit your photos every week, your best iPhone photos, and you could win. Well, you could win something, and you could also have a good feeling in your heart that you're showing the best of your work and getting inspired by others. Because if you go to our Flickr page, again, the link will be in the show notes. It's there right now. Check out everyone's photos, because there's not a clunker in there. They're great. We're going to announce the winner of the contest in just 1 second. Steve, tell everybody about how you have used Flickr groups for Behind the Shot.
It's funny, when I first, I'm curious actually if this was your experience too. Years and years and years ago, when I was first a hobbyist photographer, Flickr were the first photo walks I ever did with Flickr groups. And I've been in love with Flickr groups ever since, because like I went and walked around downtown Pasadena with a bunch of people I didn't know that we all had something in common. And when I was doing my critique shows with Don Komarechka for Behind the Shot, where we would, you know, take image submissions to be critiqued on the show, we chose Flickr as the outlet for one main reason. Flickr 100% maintains the best quality of your pictures compared to everybody else. I don't mean that because Alistair's in here and this is a commercial. I don't get anything from Flickr. I am not sponsored by Flickr. It's just true. Flickr shows your pictures the way you want them to be shown. And so when we were going to critique things, we needed somewhere that showed high quality pictures. End result was to be Flickr. They're just really,
yeah,
really
and
good
what
stuff.
Are we going to do?
And good good people too.
What are we going to do? Start a Facebook group? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Flickr group looks great. Alistair wants to remind everybody that you do not have to be a pro member to throw your pictures into the group. And I think you can post 1,000 pictures in a year before they ask you to support them with $72 a year, which is, you know, it's very reasonable. We want Flickr to be there. I mean, think about, you know, storage is a lot of money. And so I want Flickr in my life. We're getting a lot of questions. We're going to answer them very shortly. The contest. Okay, so last week we started the contest, and the winner gets a free ticket to the Kelby One upcoming iPhone Photography Conference. It's a great conference. 2 days of learning. The ticket is worth $150 today. It's worth $250 next week because they're going to raise the price. Or actually at $300, I think. Some great speakers. Frederick Van Johnson, Rick Salmon, Serge Rumeli, Susan Salmon, Lisa Carney, and myself will all be talking about the iPhone and ways to shoot like a pro. So let's show the picture that's a winner.
Before you do that, let me add something on Kelby really quick while we're there. Two things. Susan Salmon is everybody knows Rick, right, as this world-class photographer. Susan Salmon is an amazing smartphone iPhone photographer. And I've said this before, I'm going to say it again really quick. Full disclosure, I know Scott Kelby and I consider him a friend, but I've said this on my show many, many times. Kelby One to me is the definitive gold standard for what online education can be. So this is a really good prize. Enter the contest.
And so the winner of last week's contest gets into the iPhone conference for nothing. Okay, the winner of the contest we're doing today, which we will announce next week, gets a free one-year membership of Kelby One Pro worth $200. Photoshop, Lightroom, composition, flying a drone, travel stuff. There's so food photography. You name it, you'll get lost in just. I mean, you could spend hours, and so it's a pretty cool thing. I know a guy who just did a class for Kelby One on advanced iPhone tricks, photo tricks, how to shoot like a pro. It'll either post today or tomorrow. They haven't let me know, but it's coming up very soon. Yes, I did it while I was in Florida. But enough about me. Let's talk about our friend, Nath Kaplan. That's the winning photo. I think he did a beautiful job of a peer. Okay, I happen to love peers, and this is a really nice one in New Jersey. He shot this on the iPhone 14 in the Real Expose app and did a really nice job. Frederick Van Johnson, who was my guest last week, has a great quote about this. I love the simplicity and the painterly feel. The muted earth tones and the long exposure combine to make this a print-worthy piece. Congratulations, Nath. I think it's Nath, or is it? How would you pronounce N-A-T-H?
I'd say Nath. I guess it could be Nath.
Nath?
I'd say Nath, yeah. Nath? Could be Nath, like Nathan?
Yes. I obviously, this name came from Nathan. But so, again, submit your work, submit your iPhone shots to our Flickr group. You will use a hashtag that's listed in the description, so we'll be able to figure out which photos are coming in which week. And thank you for participating. Quick little thing before we jump into your questions. Hit like if you haven't liked already. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't subscribed already. We are 490 away from the magic 10,000. I also would like everyone to do me a favor, or at least one person out there. I've never done the super sticker and the super chat. Under the chat window, there's a dollar sign. If you could just like for $1, let me know that it works. Put up a sticker, put up a super chat, say hi. I would appreciate it, and so would Steve. Right, Steve?
Definitely.
You would like to see a sticker go up there.
I'd love to see a sticker.
Okay, so before that happens, I'm going to have Steve tell you about his show, and we're going to behind the shot one of his photos. But first, Steve, just tell everybody about Behind the Shot.
So Behind the Shot, the way I describe it is it's trying to get inside the mind of a great photographer by taking a closer look behind one of their shots from conception to completion and all the stories and challenges that happen in between. But an easier way to describe it is I have a photography guest on. We pick one of their photos and I look at it as the two of us. It's not me interviewing them. It's not I ask a question and sit back. It's the two of us having a conversation interviewing the photograph. My current guest is the very well-known Pete Souza, who was Ronald Reagan's White House photographer. He was Barack Obama's White House photographer for all 8 years of the Obama administration. And we chose a picture for Pete called Hair Like Me, one of the iconic pictures, kind of defined the Obama presidency in a way. Some great stories behind that one. And yeah, it's at behindtheshot.tv or Behind the Shot on YouTube. And you can find the show, by the way, anywhere you get podcasts, audio only or video format if your podcast app supports video. Otherwise, the video is on YouTube.
Okay. And let's look at one of Steve's pictures. Let's Behind the Shot it.
That's
beautiful Italy. Beautiful Italy. Tell everybody about this one.
Okay. So, yes, this is Monterola, Italy. It is part of the Cinque Terre area of Italy, which is five villages right there on the coast of Italy. And strangely enough, this was taken way back in 2015, 2016, with an iPhone 6. And with the iPhone 6, iOS had just introduced the pano feature. I didn't use it here. This was a manual pano, take a shot, turn, take a shot, turn, take a shot, turn. I assembled them all in Lightroom. And once I had them assembled, I took it into Photoshop, did a little bit and a little bit of editing in Lightroom. I took it into Photoshop, did a little bit of pro contrast from Color Effects, which is the Nick collection. And, you know, just to get the contrast the way that I wanted it, I did a black and white version of this too, I like. But the other thing that I did is there is a perspective tool in the Nick collection. And based on where I was and all the weird lines of these buildings, I couldn't really get everything the exact way that I wanted it. So I used that perspective tool, again, from the Nick collection, which is from DxO, and straightened everything to get the perspective the way that I wanted it. But this is an iPhone shot, and it maintained an iPhone 6 shot. It maintained the sky exposure, the clouds, the detail. It is shocking what you could do even back then, and you got your super sticker, $4.99. That's awesome. JR, Jim, thank you, you guys.
We got two of them. Cinque Terre, one of my favorite places in the entire world.
Yes.
There is so cool. That's where I lost my wife once on a train, but I digress. My son and I were taking pictures, and she goes, I'm hot. I don't want to stand here waiting for you. And we were right next to the train station. I said, we'll be right there. So 2 minutes later, we go over to the train, and there's no Ruth. She's disappeared. And I don't know what to do because we're taking a train to Milan, and which is then we're switching to go to Paris. No Ruth. What do I do? And the train comes and goes, and I just get on it. This is pre-cell phone, by the way, or pre-Jeff having a cell phone. And so anyway, they told me, just get on the train and get to Milan and you'll find her. And I called the hotel. It's a long story, but I called the hotel and I said, have you heard from my wife? And they said, yes, we have. She's on the train to Milan, but we eventually got there. But what happened to her is she got to the train and the train arrived and she goes, is this the train to Milan? And they said, sure, come on in. So she came on in, boom, and they took off. So it's one of those great family stories that hopefully sounds good to you guys who've all come here to hear about photography, not about Ruth getting lost. But anyway, let's answer some of your questions. One of them was Smug Mug versus Mylio. And for those of you who are loyal listeners and viewers, you know that both have been sponsors of this program, and I love them both. It's not an or. It's not an or. Smug Mug is photo galleries that look better, sell your prints if you're a photographer, have unlimited backup for your photos, and have online access. Great stuff. Mylio is a twist of backup. It's encouraging you to use your hard drives and have physical access to your photos while also giving you online access to them. So, you know, I urge everybody to have physical access to their photos and not have everything in one place that could either lock you out or you won't have access to them. So Mylio is great for physical access and also being able to get look at them on your computer and your phone and your tablet and having
they actually complement each other really well.
Yeah, so it's not one or the other. I'm a happier person having both. So that's one question. Another question, and this is a good one, is how do you organize your photos, guys? By date, location, how do you do it?
So I'm an album. Okay, so I'll go two ways. My iPhone shots, I am a heavy album user in Photos app on my Mac. So on the Mac side, it made it easier to create and manage my albums. And the first time that I really set it up the way that I wanted, I did it on the Mac, created all the albums, dragged the photos into the albums that I wanted. And a lot of times what I do is I do folders. So like, for example, I have a folder for trips. And then under that folder, I have albums for Italy 2015, you know, France 2018, Lake Tahoe skiing, whatever. So I have another one for Steve Work or Steve Family. Under Steve Work, I have one for the podcast and album. I have one for my concert photography stuff. That's how I do stuff as far as just iPhone stuff. But I do shoot some raw photos on my phone. And a lot of times when I do, I will still just pull them into Photos and edit them there. But a lot of times I will manually offload them to a folder structure on my normal hard drive, and I will then bring them in and do Lightroom. And I do the same thing for Lightroom. I have folder structures. I have my raw archive. I have the events by date under a particular folder. For example, just the other day, I photographed a show for Live Nation here in Southern California for Jerry Cantrell. And so I have a folder. I have the Jerry Cantrell folder. Under that, I have a raw folder. And then also next to the raw folder, same hierarchy, I have a folder of deliverables. Under deliverables, I have web size, full size, watermarked, no watermark, that type of thing. So that's kind of my organization system.
Okay, so I'm big on albums. Let's on the iPhone itself, if you want to find stuff, you make an album. You just need to, because how many people do you know that, where's my hand? They just scroll like crazy looking for stuff. And it's really easy on the iPhone to, and I assume on Google, I don't use Android, but it's really easy to make an album to just press select and then select the photos and put them into an album for organization. Now, most of my hierarchy, can you pronounce that correctly? Hierarchy?
Hierarchy?
Yeah, it's done on the computer. So Jeff does a shoot, comes in, imports everything into the specific folder. When I do photo walks, I shoot on multiple iPhones and on some of these other cameras. And now I will come back and I'll make a folder. Safety Harbor, Florida is this weekend. It's this little out of the way back road town in Florida that I fell in love with. So I'm doing an episode about that that'll be on Saturday. So I have a folder called Safety Harbor, and then I have iPhone 13 folder, I have iPhone 14 folder, I have Insta360 folder, I have a GoPro folder, and the drone folder. And then I put all the files into there, and then I will back them up on Smug Mug. Let's give a little caveat here. Smug Mug is great until you have video files that are over 3 gigabytes, and those files cannot be uploaded to Smug Mug. They are too big. So I usually have to do workarounds. I'd like to have everything in one place, but I can't because my files are sometimes too big. Now, the workaround, of course, is you stick it into Final Cut, and you process the video and export it as a 4K, and it will be less than the raw file. But so that's how I do online and offline backup. And let's go to another question, which is a good one, which comes from Harry. Is Google Drive the same sync issue as iCloud. And first, we should let everybody know there's Google Photos, there's Google One, and there's Google Photos. There's sort of two and three different things. Google Photos is its own animal that works with Google Drive, but I'm going to let the IT expert tell you all about it.
You know, I'm not a big Google Drive user, so I'm not actually going to be a great answer on this. But what I would say is any system that syncs between devices is where you need to really think about it and pay attention. For example, I use, as part of my backup design here, I have a locally attached OWC RAID system. It's attached over Thunderbolt. My photos go to that. I then use a Synology drive to do a one-way sync from that device to my Synology NAS. If I delete something on the locally attached storage, it does not delete it on the NAS.
Okay, can I translate?
And then my backflaze backs up.
I need to translate for those who don't know what Steve is talking about. Synology is a network server that is an alternative to hard drive backup. And you're storing everything, actually on drives and online as well. I'll let you re-explain.
Yeah, basically what it is you have hard drives that connect to your computer and you talk to them over a cable. Then you have hard drives that sit on a network cable that are available on your network as a whole. And I use kind of both of those. But the direct answer to the Google Drive issue is Google Drive is still a syncing system where what I do on my computer translates up to Google Drive. So you have to be careful because if you delete it in Google Drive, it can delete it from the computer too. There may be settings to prevent that, but again, I'm not a huge Google Drive user.
First of all, on Synology, I tested it, and because I'm so video-centric, the files were much slower to upload. Days. I mean, and it was not worth my effort to do that.
Part of that's going to be how you set up the Synology, what RAID version you choose. There's a lot of options in there to speed it up. I do know people who work off of a Synology. If you put a high-speed card, 10-gig card in it with a 10-gig switch for video, you can work off the thing all day long. There's options there. But okay, yeah, in general, it's an archive system for me. It's not a working drive.
Google Drive is a virtual hard drive, right? And it's two terabytes for $10 a month. Google Photos is also, it depends on how much storage you get, but you could store all your photos and get access to Google Search, which is just as good as it gets, right? But they downgrade your photos unless you pay for full resolution, and your $10 a month is tied into your Gmail. So if you go over the limit, now 2 terabytes, you may not go over the limit, but a lot of people go over the limit. All of a sudden, you can't email. You can't read your email. You can't do anything until this gets unlocked. I don't like to have the two tied together. It's very unnerving. But as far as, and also Steve talked about the syncing that you can do with Google. No good. Very scary. And it did not work for me. And you have the similar delete issues that you won't have. I know Steve likes to do automatic backup. I'm a photographer. I do my shoot. I back it up. I do my shoot. I back it up. I create folders for everything I do. I've been out photographing the snow-capped mountains of LA all week. And I have a folder called Snow Day. It's just how I do it. Question about buying a new phone. From JR, I have been an LG user mostly for removable SD memory, but they are out of the phone business and I need a replacement. The old, what kind of phone should I buy? Okay, I'm a fan of the iPhone. I would get the iPhone 14 Pro, but we're in March. I would wait now until September because there's going to be a new phone that will connect to USB-C, so the charging is going to be better. It will have a better camera. It will probably have a zoom lens, finally, a periscope lens like the Samsung, and it'll have a new chip and a new sensor from Sony, so I would wait. What do you say, Steve?
Yeah, first of all, the new phone, based on the rumors with the periscope zoom, although rumors are it's only going to be a 6x zoom, whereas we have Android phones right now with 10x. I'm hoping it hits 10. But, part of what JR asked was he had said, he knows that we're more geared towards iPhones, but he's wondering what we would recommend Android-wise because of the LG issue that you mentioned. And I'm a fan of Pixel phones. I think the Google Pixel phones are wonderful. For example, the Google Pixel phones got the Google Night Mode long before any of the other Android manufacturers had it. Their hardware is fantastic. It's not as easy in some ways to get support, but the Pixel phones are great.
I like the Pixel phones. They do some color stuff, tweaking that's a little too strong for me, but overall, if you gave me a Google Pixel phone, I'd be a very happy person. And they're also less expensive, way less expensive than the Galaxies. I want to remind
everybody. And gorgeous hardware, by the way.
Yeah. We have time for some more questions, so please submit. I've got a few written down here. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. Thank you for the super stickers. Please submit photos to our Flickr group. A setting or two in the camera app that you use. And I'm going to tell you about two of my favorites in the camera app that I think are not used that much, the exposure control. It's in the menu, and you can go up two stops, you can go down two stops. And, you know, the great thing about the iPhone is that the pictures are always perfectly exposed, and they're always in focus, except when they're not. Sometimes automatic doesn't work. My classic case for this is when going into a church and shooting a stained glass window, and it will try to expose for everything when you actually want it to go two stops down. So then you will go into the menu. Let me quickly, the little carrot, my phone is off, so I can't do that. The little carrot button at the top of the screen, and you pull it down, and you'll see a bunch of things in there. Exposure control is one of them. If you can't find it, hit me up, Jefferson Graham, at Gmail. I'm at Jefferson Graham on Twitter. Leave a comment here, and I will get you the information. But it is not used that much, and they also do automatic HDR. But you can do manual HDR. One underexposed, one overexposed, one normal, and then you could sandwich the pictures in Lightroom on your computer, and it looks a lot better than automatic HDR. Steve, what feature do you like?
So I'm going to echo your exposure thing, because I see people just take a point and shoot iPhone approach. And a lot of times it works good, but if you've got a backlit subject, sometimes you want that subject to be exposed and let the background blow out, and you can do that manually. But I have two. I'm a huge user on the photo side of portrait mode. Once you get comfortable with figuring out how to get it to focus where you want, I like it because even if it doesn't, and here's where I think a lot of people miss it. They do portrait mode and they realize it kind of missed an edge or the depth of field was too shallow. When you go into edit, you can change the aperture choice. So if it's shot at a quote unquote 2.8 portrait mode, you can change it to 4.5. You can change it to 5.6 if you want to and get it just the way you want it. So I really like the portrait mode. And then on the video end, this is something I never see anybody do. And that is manual zooming. They hit the one, they hit the two, they pinch, whatever. But if you hold down the number one on the, you know, you have the 0.5, the one, the three, whatever zoom. If you hold down on the number one while you're doing video and drag your thumb, the big zoom wheel comes up. And so you can do a nice shot where you're, for example, wide on a scene with somebody talking in it. And then you slowly pan left and zoom in on somebody's face. And it's just a great way to take a little bit more control out of your video recording.
Okay. Mark Thompson is asking us a question, but it's actually Kim McAllister, who is a part of the Mark Thompson Show and will be my special guest next week. And
nice.
So she'll be joining us. And I want to thank you, Kim. She's become my new best friend. I've been on two of her live streams today. And it was Mark and Kim and Albert, my inspiration for doing this live show, because I started doing the Mark Thompson Show about 4 months ago as their Thursday regular. And the response was so fantastic. And I said, why don't I do this too? And the response from all you guys have been great. My big worry about going live was, would anybody show up? And you're here. And you even gave me a super sticker. So I want to thank you for that. Kim's question, if I understand it correctly, is that she used to use night mode on the Google Pixel. Then she switched to a new iPhone, and each to something's better than the other. I'm not sure exactly what she's saying, but night mode on the iPhone is incredible, but it'll drive you crazy because it's automatic. You can't turn it on. It turns on by itself when it wants to, when it decides that it's dark enough that it's time for night mode. And then when it's time for night mode, it will go automatic again. There you can actually change it and go manual, and you can make the shutter stay open longer for what is you bring in light in the darkness. And if you put it on a tripod, Apple can figure it out, and it will stay open even longer. I've gotten great shots of the night mode, and I kind of explore night mode on my Kelby One class, which is premiering today or tomorrow. So that's what I have to say about night mode. What do you say, Steve?
So night mode, when it first came out on the Pixel, was a game changer, and I literally was saying to my wife, "Oh my God, I want that feature on my phone so bad." The night mode on the phone is fantastic, but like Jefferson said, one, I can't turn it on and go, I know you don't think I need it right now, but I really want a long exposure in the native app. I don't want to have to go to a third-party app, and you can't. The other thing is, when it does kick in, yeah, you can manually go in and turn it to zero time. You can't just say turn it off. You have to go in and say do zero time, which is really stupid. And you can go up to, I think it's 9 seconds. But yes, when you put that thing on a tripod or a magnetic mount from Moment on a tripod, you suddenly can go do Star Trails. It's amazing what you can do in night mode. You just got to play with it a little bit, though.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about the iPhone is playing with it is trial and error. Kim, actually on their show today, showed me some pictures that she took at a tiki bar in Petaluma yesterday, and she said, how could I make it better? And it's kind of hard to tell because we're doing live streaming here. But, you know, here's a glass, right? I will shoot it this way. Oh, let's go for a full shot. Okay, here's a glass. I'll shoot it this way. I'll shoot it that way. I'll shoot it this way. I'll shoot it this way. I'll shoot it every angle there is, because one of those is going to work out pretty well. It's getting.
By the way, speaking of phones on a tripod, I love this thing. I don't know if you've ever used one, but it's the magnetic mount from Moment. Because if this is on a tripod, you can very easily. I hit my mic. Sorry. Just throw your phone on it. Take your picture. Take your phone off, and it's MagSafe. So it's really, really handy.
And people love to hear about gear. And so how much did that cost?
That's a really good question. I think I'm thinking it was less than $50. But I will say the build quality is amazing, and you stick this on a platypod and you're just set. I mean, you set the platypod down on anything, on a desk, on a railing, and you can take your night shot anywhere you want to go.
Okay. What's it called again?
This is from the company Moment.
Yeah.
And it's one of their MagSafe mounts for the iPhone from Moment.
Okay.
It even has a cold shoe.
Oh, that's good. Put in light or a mic. It's come to that time. We've done the second edition of PhotoWalk Talks live. And I can't thank enough for everybody hanging out with us. Did we get a nice super sticker there. A big $20. I think, you know what? I'm going to buy you dinner next week, Steve. What do you think?
That works for me. I'll see you at WPPI.
Steve and I are going to the greatest Mexican restaurant that I've ever been to. I love this place so much. It's called Juan's Flaming Fajitas. Now let that sink in. Flaming fajitas. And anybody who goes to Las Vegas needs to seek out this place. They're so incredible. Even my mother, who was skeptical, agreed with me. They were the greatest fajitas she's ever had.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for watching. Don't forget to tune in Saturday to watch PhotoWalks TV in Safety Harbor, Florida, which is near Tampa. Please submit a photo to our Flickr group, and so that you could participate in our contest. You'll get a free one-year membership. One lucky person will get a free one-year membership to Kelby One, the premier online photo instruction. And Steve is going to help me sift through the photos. Right, Steve?
I will do that.
Like, comment, which you've been doing, share, and please subscribe if you haven't. We're $4.90 from the Magic Magic 10,000. Can we get there by next week? Next Thursday, Kim McAllister will be here with us. She is the newscaster at the Mark Thompson Show and the Nicki Maduro Show, two shows that went from radio to YouTube, and they're doing gangbusters. And we're going to hear more about Kim's photography, and Kim is going to be the voice of the average consumer, and you'll get to hear more about Kim. So that is our show. The replay will be, the podcast will be available wherever you listen to fine podcasts. The replay will be right here on YouTube. Thank you, everybody, for watching, and we will see you next week. Thank you.